ಅಜ್ಞಾನತಿಮಿರಾಂಧಸ್ಯ ಜ್ಞಾನಾಂಜನಶಲಾಕಯ ಚಕ್ಷುರುನ್ಮಿಳಿತಂ ಯೇನ ತಸ್ಮೈ ಶ್ರೀಗುರವೇ ನಮಃ. ಶ್ರೀಚೈತನ್ಯ ಮನೋಭೀಷ್ಟಂ ಸ್ಥಾಪಿತಂ ಯೇನ ಭೂತಲೆ ಸ್ವಯಂ ರೂಪ ಕದಾ ಮಹ್ಯಂ ದದಾತಿ ಸ್ವಪದಾಂತಿಕಂ. ವಂದೇಹಂ ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರೋಃ ಶ್ರೀಯುತಾಪದಕಮಲಂ ಶ್ರೀಗುರುನ್ ವೈಷ್ಣವಾಂಶ್ಚ ಶ್ರೀರೂಪಂ ಸಾಗ್ರಜಾತಂ ಸಹಗಣಾರಘುನಾಥನ್ವಿತಂ ತಂ ಸಜೀವಂ ಸಾದ್ವೈತಂ ಸಾವಧೂತಂ ಪರಿಜನಸಹಿತಂ ಕೃಷ್ಣಚೈತನ್ಯದೇವಂ ಶ್ರೀರಾಧಾಕೃಷ್ಣಪಾದಾನ್ ಸಹಗಣಾಲಲಿತಾ ಶ್ರೀವಿಶಾಖಾನ್ವಿತಾಂಶ್ಚ. ಹೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣಕರುಣಾಸಿಂಧೋ ದೀನಬಂಧೋ ಜಗತ್ಪತೆ ಗೋಪೇಶ ಗೋಪಿಕಾಕಾಂತ ರಾಧಾಕಾಂತ ನಮೋಸ್ತುತೆ. ತಪ್ತ ಕಾಂಚನ ಗೌರಾಂಗೀ ರಾಧೇ ವೃಂದಾವನೇಶ್ವರಿ ವೃಷಭಾನುಸುತೆ ದೇವೀ ಪ್ರಣಮಾಮಿ ಹರಿಪ್ರಿಯೇ. ವಾಂಛಾಕಲ್ಪತರುಭ್ಯಶ್ಚ ಕೃಪಾಸಿಂಧುಭ್ಯ ಏವ ಚ ಪತಿತಾನಾಂ ಪಾವನೇಭ್ಯೋ ವೈಷ್ಣವೇಭ್ಯೋ ನಮೋ ನಮಃ. ಜಯ ಶ್ರೀ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಪ್ರಭೋ ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಶ್ರೀ ಅದ್ವೈತ ಗದಾಧರ ಶ್ರೀವಾಸದಿ ಗೌರಭಕ್ತವೃಂದ. ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೇ ಹರೇ, ಹರೇ ರಾಮೋ ಹರೇ ರಾಮೋ ರಾಮ ರಾಮೋ ಹರೇ ಹರೇ.
Hare Krishna. So we have discussed 12 chapters of 8th canto. So basically 8th canto, the main theme, there are 10 topics of Bhagavatam. Okay, out of that Manvantara is the topic, is the predominant topic of 8th canto. So 8th canto begins with a description of the six elements or six expansions of Supreme Personality of Godhead in Manvantara. In the first Manvantara, Swayambhu Manvantara, we have discussed. Then first chapter also describes the six elements of the first four Manvantaras. Then Parikshit Maharaj has a question. In the fourth Manvantara, Lord Hari saved Gajendra. So I want to know about that pastime. So Sukadeva Goswami spends three chapters describing the episode of Gajendra. Lord Hari protecting Gajendra. Then he continues the descriptions of the six elements of fifth and sixth Manvantaras. So then in the sixth Manvantara, again, Samudra Manthan episode happened. So Sukadeva Goswami, Parikshit Maharaj asked some details of Samudra Manthan pastime, and Sukadeva Goswami elaborated on it. Till 11th chapter is the description of the Samudra Manthan episode. from 5th chapter till 11th chapter. So those 7 chapters are describing Samudra Manthan. Then Sukadeva Goswami is continuing the description from the 7th Manvantara here. So this particular chapter, 13th chapter, describes the 6 elements of 7th Manvantara, 8th Manvantara and all the future Manus also. 14 Manvantaras. So that is the subject matter of 13th chapter. And in the 14th chapter, Sukadeva Goswami gives a description, job description of the 6 elements. So Manvantaro, Manurdeva, Manuputra, Sureshwaraha. So there are 6 elements of Manvantara: Manu, Manuputras, then king of demigods and the demigods and the sages, 7 sages, important sages, and an incarnation, an Amshavatar of the Lord. So these are the 6 elements of a Manvantara. So what do they do? What is their job profile? So that is described in the 14th chapter. So these are very short chapters. Then we'll begin with Bali Maharaj's episode. So 13th chapter. So there is not much to describe here. So you can please read the translations from first verse. Sukadeva Goswami said, the present Manu, who is named Shraddha Deva, is the son of Vivasvan, the predominating deity on the sun planet. Shraddha Deva is the 7th Manu. Now please hear from me as I describe his sons. So among the 10 sons of Manu are Ikshvaku, Nabhaga, Drishta, Saryati, Narishyanta and Nabhaga. So some of these stories of these kings, Nabhaga, Nabhaga and all, we hear in 9th canto. Ambarish Maharaj's predecessors. The 7th son is known as Dishta. Then came Tarusha and Prishadra, and the 10th son is known as Vasuman. In this Manvantara, the Adityas, the Vasus, the Rudras, the Vishwadevas, the Maruts, the 2 Ashwini Kumaras, brothers and Ribhus, Ashwini Kumara brothers and Ribhus are the demigods. Their head king Indra is Purandara. So Kashyapa, Atri, Vasishta, Vishwamitra, Gautama, Jamadagni and Bharadvaja are known as the 7 sages. In this Manvantara, the Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared as the youngest of all the Adityas, known as Vamana, the dwarf. His father was Kashyapa and his mother Aditi. I have briefly explained. Saptarishis, Prabhu. In the 7th Manvantara, these are the sages. These 7 sages will keep changing every Manvantara. So in this Manvantara, the incarnation is Vamandev. So I have briefly explained to you the position of 7 Manus. Now I shall describe the future Manus along with the incarnations of Lord Vishnu. I have previously described in the 6th canto the 2 daughters of Vishwakarma named Samnya and Chaya, who were the first 2 wives of Vivasvan. It is said that Sun God has a 3rd wife called Vadava. Of the 3 wives, the wife named Samnya had 3 children, Yama, Yami and Shraddha Deva. Now let me describe the children of Chaya. Chaya had a son named Savarni and a daughter named Tapati, who later became the wife of King Samvarana. Chaya's 3rd child is known as Saneshchara, Saturn, and Vadava gave birth to 2 sons, namely the Ashwini brothers. When the period of 8th Manu arrives, Savarni will become the Manu. Then Nirmoka and Virajaska will be among his sons. In this period of 8th Manu, among the demigods were the Sutapas and Virajas and Amritaparhas. The king of the demigods Indra will be Bali Maharaj, the son of Virochan. Bali Maharaj gave a gift of 3 paces of land to Lord Vishnu, and because of this charity, he lost the 3 worlds. Later, however, when Lord Vishnu is pleased because of Bali Maharaj's giving everything to him, Bali Maharaj will achieve the perfection of life. So in the beginning of 15th chapter, we will find Sukadeva Goswami, Parikshit Maharaj, asking a question about this. Here, Sukadeva Goswami spoke Bali Maharaj's episode in just 1 verse only, in very short. So Parikshit Maharaj wanted an elaboration. He elaborates for several chapters in the 8th canto. Please continue reading 14th verse onwards.
With great affection, the personality of Godhead bound Bali and then installed him in the kingdom of Sutala, which is more opulent than the heavenly planets. Maharaj Bali now resides on the planet and is more comfortably situated than Indra. O King, during the 8th Manvantara, the great personalities Galava, Diptaman, Parushurma, Ashwatthama, Kripacharya, Rasya, Asanga, and our father Vyasdev, the incarnation of Narayan, will be the seven sages. For the present, they are all residing in their respective ashrams. In the 8th Manvantara, the greatly powerful personality of Godhead, Sarvabhauma, will take birth. His father will be Devaguya and his mother will be Saraswati. He will take the kingdom away from the Purandar, Lord Indra, and give it to Bali Maharaj. O King, the 9th Manu will be Daksha Savarni, who is born of Varuna. Among his sons will be Bhuta Ketu and Dipta Ketu.
So all these manvantaras are given in a small tabular form in your overview PowerPoint. So later you can go through. Yes, continue.
9th manvantara. The Paras, the Marichibhas will be the among the demigods. The king of the heaven Indra will be named Adbhut and Dyutiman will be among the seven sages. Rishabhdev, a partial incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, will take birth from his father Ayushman and his mother Ambudhara. He will enable the Indra named Adbhut to enjoy the opulence of the three worlds. The son of Upashlok, known as Brahma Savarni, will be the 10th Manu. Bhurishen will be among his sons, and the Brahmanas headed by Havishman will be the seven sages. Havishman, Sukrit, Satya, Jaya, Murti and others will be seven sages. The Suvasanas and Viruddhas will be among the demigods, and Shambhu will be their king Indra. In the home of Visvarastha, the plenary portion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead will appear from the womb of Vishuchi as the incarnation known as Vishwaksen. He will make friends with Shambhu. In the 11th Manvantara, the Manu will be Dharma Savarni, who will be extremely learned in spiritual knowledge. From him there will come 10 sons headed by Satya Dharma. The Vihangamas, Kamagamas, Nirvan, Naruchis and others will be the demigods. The king of the demigods Indra will be Vedhrit, and the seven sages will be headed by Aruna. The son of Aryaka, known as Dharma Setu, a partial incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, will appear from the womb of Vedhrita, the wife of Aryaka, and will rule the three worlds. O king, the 12th Manu will be named as Rudra Savarni, Devvan, Upadev and Devaresht will be among his sons. In this Manvantara, the name of the Indra will be Ritadham, and the demigods will be headed by Haritas. Among the sages will be Tapomurti, Tapasvi, Agni, Draka. From the mother named Sunritta and the father named Satyasaha will come Swadham, a partial incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He will rule that Manvantaras. The 13th Manu will be named Dev Savarni, and he will be very advanced in spiritual knowledge. Among his sons will be Chitrasen and Vichitra. In the 13th Manvantara, the Sukarmas and Sutramas will be among the demigods. Divaspati will be the king of heaven, and the Nirmok and Tattva Darsh will be among the seven sages. The son of Devahotra, known as Yogeshwar, will appear as the partial incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. His mother's name will be Brihati. He will perform activities for welfare of Divaspati. The name of the 14th Manu will be Indra Savarni. He will have sons like Uru, Gambhir and Buddha. The Pavitra Chakshusha will be among the demigods, and Shuchi will be the Indra, the king of heaven. Agni, Bahu, Shuchi, Shuddha, Magadha, and others of great austerity will be the seven sages. O King Parikshit, in the 14th Manvantara, the Supreme Personality of Godhead will appear from the womb of Vitan, and his father's name will be Satrayana. This incarnation will be celebrated as Brihad Bhanu, and he will administer spiritual activities. O King, I have now described you the 14 Manus appearing in past, present and future. The total duration of time ruled by these Manus is 100 Yuga cycles. This is 1000 Yuga cycles. This is called a Kalpa, or one day of Brahma.
So all 14 Manus together rule for 1000 Yuga cycles. Each will be approximately around 71 Divya Yugas, 71 Chatur Yugas. So in the 11th purport, when Sukadeva Goswami is describing, is beginning to describe about the future Manus also, 8th Manu also, Prabhupada nicely mentions that currently 28th Yuga cycle of Vaivasvat Manu is going on. Currently, we are in the 7th Manvantara. But Sukadeva Goswami is speaking about 8th Manvantara, which is like millions of years ahead. And until 14th Manvantara, he is continuing. So Prabhupada says, scriptures can predict what's going to happen in future. And it will exactly happen like that only. So scriptures have that ability. So that Prabhupada acknowledges. And in the 13th verse, Radham Indra Padam Hitva Tata Siddhim Avapsyati. Indra Padam. The Bali Maharaj got this Indra Padam, the position of Indra. So Tata Siddhim Avapsyati. He got that perfection. So Prabhupada says that it's very rare to achieve perfection. Manushyanam Sahasreshu Kaschit Yatati Siddhaye. Very few people only will attain Siddhi. But the actual Siddhi is to attain the mercy of the Lord, which Bali Maharaj got, not the Ashta Siddhis, which are attained by yoga practice. Anima, Mahima, Laghima, they are not the real Siddhis, they are yoga Siddhis. But better Siddhi is to achieve favor of Lord Vishnu, which Bali Maharaj got. So Prabhupada mentions that. Otherwise, this is all details about 14 Manvantaras.
Manu Samhita.
I'm not sure, Prabhu. Swayambhu Manu, in Swayambhu Manu's context, Prabhupada says, he is the original Manu, so he can give Manu Samhita. But is it a changing scripture according to every Manu, or is it like standard scriptures? I'm not sure. It could be standard also. I'm not very sure. 14th chapter. Shri Rajo Vacha Manvantareshu Bhagavan Yatha Manvadayastitvami Yasmin Karmani Yena Niyuktas Tadvadasvame.
Maharaj Parikshit inquired, O most opulent Sukadeva Goswami, please explain to me how Manu and the others in each Manvantara are engaged in their respective duties, and by whose order they are so engaged.
Who engages them? Who employs them? That is his question. Sri Rishir Uvacha Manavo Manu Putrascha Munayascha Mahipate Indrasuraganascheva Sarve Purusha Shasanaha.
Sukadeva Goswami said, the Manus, the sons of Manu, the great sages, the Indras, and all the demigods, O King, are appointed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead in His various incarnations such as Yajna.
So, there are six elements. What are the six elements? Five are given here. Manavo, one. Manuputra, two. Munayaha, three. Indra, four. Suragana, means demigods, five. So these are the five elements. Sixth element is the Amshavatar of Supreme Lord. So that incarnation of the Supreme Lord would employ the other five elements. Right? The Manus, they are appointed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his various incarnations, such as Yajna. So Yajna is the incarnation of which Manvantara? First Manvantara. Right? He is the son of Yajna, Akuti, Ruchi. Okay, he is the son of their son is Yajna. Okay, another incarnation, Kapildev. Right, he is the son of Devahuti and Kardama. So here incarnations of the Supreme Lord like Yajna would employ the other five expansions. Right, Yajna dayo yah kathita purushyas tanavon rupa. Manvadayo jagadyatram nayanti abhihi prachoditah.
O King, I have already described to you various incarnations of the Lord, such as Yajna. The Manus and others are chosen by these incarnations, under whose direction they conduct the universal affairs.
Under his direction, other five elements are conducting the universal affairs. So they execute the orders of Supreme Personality of Godhead in various incarnations. Chaturyugante kalena grasatan shruti ganan yatha tapasarushayo pasyan yato dharmas sanatanah.
At the end of every four yugas, the great saintly persons, upon seeing that the eternal occupational duties of mankind have been misused, re-establish the principles of religion.
So now the rest of the chapter is, what do these elements do? Okay, what do the sages do? What do these demigods do? So what is their job description? So fourth verse is describing about what do these rishis do. There are seven sages in every manvantara. So, they are all posts only. Different personalities are occupying these posts. So, in this Manvantara, these seven personalities would be the seven prominent sages. So, that is mentioned. So, what do? These sages, when the principles of religion or eternal occupational duty, Sanatana Dharma, so when they are getting diminished or misused, they re-establish the principles of religion. Right? Yato Dharma Sanatanaha. Tapasa rishayo pashyan yato dharma sanatanaha. So when things are getting diminished, they try to re-establish dharma. Prabhupada speaks on sanatan dharma. Prabhupada gives elaborate purport on this episode only, mainly. Because the role of sages is very important. Because they are establishing sanatan dharma, okay, which is getting lost. Prabhupada says the duty of saintly persons therefore is to take up seriously the cause of Sanatana Dharma and try to re-establish it for the benefit of entire human society. Especially in Kali Yuga, Kalair Dosha Nidhe Rajan, Tisyeho Eko Mahan Vanaha. So in Kali Yuga, all bad qualities only are there. But one good quality is by chanting the holy names of Krishna, one can attain liberation. So everyone has to spread this holy name. Okay, and try to re-establish the Sanatana Dharma, right, by spreading this Krishna consciousness movement. That is the message Prabhupada gives. So Sanatana Dharma, what exactly is Sanatana Dharma? Prabhupada writes in the last few lines, the eternal occupational duty of human being is to serve Krishna. Jivera Sarupahai Krishnera Nityadas. So this is the purport of Sanatana Dharma. Sanatana means Nitya or eternal. Krishna Dasa means servant of Krishna. So the eternal occupational duty of human being is to serve Krishna. So this is the sum and substance of Krishna consciousness movement. So Krishna consciousness movement is playing the role of the seven sages. Right? Predominantly. So in re-establishing Sanatana Dharma.
Tato dharmam chatushpadam manavo harinoditaha yukta sancharayantyadha sve sve kale mahim drupa.
Thereafter, O King, the Manus, being fully engaged according to the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, directly establish the principles of directly re-establish the principles of occupational duty in its full four parts.
So manus, what do? They establish this occupational duties. Okay, dharmam chatushpadam. So Prabhupada writes in the purport, dharma or occupational duty can be established in its four parts as explained in Bhagavad Gita. Imam vyosvate yogam proktavan aham avyam. Following the same process, Krishna consciousness movement is teaching the principles of Bhagavad Gita as it is, without deviation. If the fortunate people of this time accept the instructions of Lord Krishna, they will certainly be happy. So Manu has to re-establish this dharma. So what sages do is Sanatana Dharma. Okay, Manus take care of the administration part. Sages take care of the spiritual part. Right? That is that we need to understand. They are also re-establishing dharma. They are also re-establishing dharma. Is there an overlap in the profile? Yeah, there is some overlap, maybe. But the administration part is taken care by Manus. And sages will take care of the spiritual aspect of dharma. Okay. Then, next. Palayanti prajapala yavadantam vibhagashah yajnabhaga bhujo deva yechatatra anvitas chataihi.
Namely, the sons and grandsons of Manu discharge the order of Supreme Personality of Godhead until the end of Manu's region. The demigods also share the results of these sacrifices.
So demigods, what do? They accept the share of results of all sacrifices that are done. Here, Prabhupada is speaking that the rulers of the world in the line of hierarchy execute the order of Supreme Lord in Parampara system. Anyone interested in peaceful life must participate in the Parampara system and perform Yajna. And wherever Yajna comes, Prabhupada emphasizes Sankirtan Yajna. That has to be performed here. So this verse is describing about the duty of demigods. Next verse is speaking about the duty of Indra. Okay? They accept the shares of their sacrifices and give the results also to the people who are Indro Bhagavata Dattam Trailokya Shriyam Urjitam Bhunjana Pati Lokam Strin Kamam Loke Pravarshati.
Indra, King of Heaven, receiving benedictions from the Supreme Personality of Godhead and thus enjoying highly developed opulences, maintains the living entities all over the three worlds by pouring sufficient rain on all the planets.
Indra is the king of all these demigods. He is Sureshwarah. Others, the previous verse describes Suras. And here, he is Sureshwarah. So he is the king, and then he has to maintain all the living entities by pouring rain on the planets. Jnanam chana chanu yugam bruhete Hari siddha swarupadruk Rishirupadhara karma Yogam yogesha rupadruk.
In every yuga, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, assumes the form of siddhas such as Sanaka to preach transcendental knowledge. He assumes the form of great saintly persons such as Yajnavalkya to teach the way of karma. And he assumes the form of great yogis such as Dattatreya to teach the system of mystic yoga.
So here Sukadeva Goswami explaining that Supreme Lord also performs so many activities in various incarnations. Sargam Prajesha Rupena Dasyun Hanyat Swarad Vapu Kala Rupena Sarvesham Abhavaya Prithakguna.
In the form of Prajapati Marichi, the Supreme Personality of Godhead creates progeny. Becoming the king, he kills the thieves and rogues. And in the form of time, he annihilates everything. All the different qualities of material existence should be understood to be qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Yad yad vibhuti matsatvam srimadurjitam evava tattat evava gacchatvam mamat edomsa sambhavam. So all the different people are performing different activities, the empowerment has to come from Supreme Lord only. So all these other elements which are described here, they are also considered to be expansions of the Supreme Lord only. Okay, they may be empowered living entities by the Supreme Lord, or sometimes Supreme Lord himself takes the post. In the first Manvantara, so Lord Yajna, who is the Manvantara incarnation, he became Indra also. Right? Sometimes other, so in this Manvantara, sixth Manvantara, Purandara was given the charge. Next Manvantara, Bali will be given the charge. Like that. So they are empowered by the Lord. So Lord does all this. As Manu, he creates progeny. Like that. As Prajapati. Eighth verse is about incarnations, yeah, Amshavataras, another element. And this Manuputra is already given here, along with demigods. Manuputra is also mentioned in the verse number 6. To enjoy the results of sacrifices, the rulers of the world, namely the sons and grandsons of Manu, they are Manuputras, discharge the orders of Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that is the only thing given there. So, a fifth verse about Manus. Sixth verse about Manuputras and demigods. Three things are there. Then seventh verse. Duty of Manuputras, just follow the orders of Manu and Supreme Personality of Godhead and discharge the duties. So they are there. So for example, Manuputra in the first Manvantara is Priyavrata and Uttanapad. Uttanapad not much is mentioned, but Priyavrata, when there is a need, immediately Brahmaji came, and then according to the order of Supreme Lord, he had to engage in certain activities. So they are like office bearers. Of so seventh verse is Indra. Then eighth verse is about incarnations. Stuyamano janair ebhir mayayana marupaya vimohitatma bhir nana darshanair nachadrishyate.
People in general are bewildered by the illusory energy, and therefore they try to find the absolute truth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, through various types of research and philosophical speculation. Nevertheless, they are unable to see the Supreme Lord.
So speculation is not the way to see the Supreme Lord. One has to do bhakti. There are many varieties of philosophers trying to search the ultimate cause under different names and forms, but they are unable to find Krishna. He is the origin of everything, cause of all causes. This inability is due to the illusory energy of Supreme Lord. Maya javanika channam agna dhokshatam avyayam na lakshase modadhrusha nato natya dharo yatha. Devotees therefore accept the Supreme Personality of Godhead as He is and remain happy simply by chanting the glories of the Lord. Etat kalpa vikalpasya pramanan parikirtitam yatra manvantaran yahus chaturdasha puravida.
In one kalpa or one day of Brahma, there take place many changes called vikalpas. O King, all of these have been previously described to you by me. Learned scholars who know the past, present and future have ascertained that in one day of Brahma, there are 14 Manus.
Okay. So that completes the description of Manus. So Manvantara episode is more or less complete by that point. But Bali Maharaj, our Sukadev Parikshit Maharaj's enquiry will take the canto till 23rd chapter. One enquiry about Bali Maharaj from 15th chapter till 23rd chapter is Bali Maharaj episode. In the last chapter is about an episode of our Vaivashvata Manu, right, with Matsyavatar, right? There was a partial inundation that happened and Brahmaji dozed off. So the event is described there. And so that's how 8th canto ends. So now we are entering Bali Maharaj episode. So this has continuity to one of the previous chapters. Which chapter?
Third chapter.
11th chapter. So what was there in the 11th chapter? demigods and demons fought with each other. After the Samudra Manthan, Mohini Murti came, and then she gave nectar to demigods, and then demons were royally cheated, and they became angry. There was a big battle. So in the battle, all the demons were defeated by the demigods' party. So Bali Maharaj collapsed, but because of his Mrita Sanjeevani Shakti, Sukracharya revived Bali Maharaj. So what happened after revival of Bali Maharaj is described in this chapter, 15th chapter.
Now, earlier we saw that the post of Indra was given to Bali Maharaj in the 8th Manvantara. So in that instance, how do we understand, like, Bali Maharaj is trying to fight himself to get the post of Indra. He partially succeeds, then Vamandev comes, takes it from him, and then gives it to Indra. Then later, again, gives it back to Bali, or how do we understand this?
See, the post of Indra in this Manvantara, 7th Manvantara, is reserved for Purandara. So Bali Maharaj was trying to occupy that post. No, the six elements are already fixed. Why do you want to enjoy now? You want to be Indra, you do go to the next Manvantara. Like that. So
he was sent to Sutala. He will be residing
in Bali. He was in Sutala. Now he is in Sutala.
Okay. So then 8th Manvantara comes, he will occupy the post.
Correct.
Okay.
Past times we hear in Bhagavatam, so they might be different personalities.
It depends on which Manvantara it is happening.
We just hear Indra and then...
The post is mentioned.
Okay.
Name is not mentioned. So current Manvantara is Purandara. So once His Holiness Radhanaswami Maharaj was saying something about some mistake of Indra, and then somebody was laughing. So Maharaj said... you are laughing, Indra is hearing you. Okay, be careful. Then later he said, no, that Indra may be different. Now so there is some other Indra. Okay, we'll begin the 15th chapter. Sri Rajo Vacha Bale Padatrayam Bhumeh Kasmadharir Ayachata Bhuteshwara Kripanaval Labdhartopi Babandhatam Etadveditumichamo Mahatkautu Halamhina Yachne Yachneshwarasya Purnasya Bandhanam Chapyanagasa
Maharaj Parikshit inquired, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the proprietor of everything. Why did he beg 3 paces of land from Bali Maharaj like a poor man? And when he got the gift for which he had begged, why did he nonetheless arrest Bali Maharaj? I am very much anxious to know the mystery of these contradictions.
So here Parikshit Maharaj is inquiring. Balehi padatrayam bhumehi kasmadharir ayachata. So how can the Supreme Lord, who is the Bhuteshwara? Bhuteshwara means he is proprietor of everything, this whole entire universe. Right? Kripanaval, Kripanavat, just like a Kripana, a poor man, he is going and begging. What? 3 steps of land from Bali Maharaj. How could this happen? That was his first question. Then, Labdhartopi Babandhatam, Etad Vedati Michamo, Mahat Kautuhilam Hinaha, I want to know this and I am greatly eager. Mahat Kautuhilam, I am very curious to know about this. Yachneshwarasya Purnasya Bandham Chapi Anagasaha. Yachneshwar, even after he begged, Yachneshwarasya Purnasya, and whatever he begged was given to him, was offered to him. Still, he was Babandhata, he tied Bali Maharaj, right? When he got what he begged for, why did he arrest Bali Maharaj? These were the 2 questions that Parikshit Maharaj is asking about Bali Maharaj. Why he has to beg in the first place? Second, when he received what he has begged for, why he has to arrest Bali Maharaj? Third verse. Shri Shuka Uvacha Parajita Shrir Asubhischa Pito Hinendra Rajan Bhrugubhissa Jivita
sarvatmana tan abhajat bhrugun bali shishyo mahatma artha nivedanena.
Sukadev Goswami said, O king, when Bali Maharaj lost all his opulence and died in that fight, Sukracharya, descendant of Bhrigu Muni, brought him back to life. Because of this, the great soul Bali Maharaj became a disciple of Sukracharya and began to serve him with great faith, offering everything he had.
So, this is the description of Bali Maharaj's faithful service to Brahmana, to Guru, to Sukracharya. So he lost everything and he died in fight. So Prabhupada writes here, died in fight. Earlier it was like he was almost dead. So Sukracharya, he revived him. So because of this, Bali Maharaj became disciple of Sukracharya and began to serve him with great faith. So here is the beginning of one theme. This whole chapter has one prominent theme, how blessings of great souls can empower you to such an extent that you can conquer even heaven. So, faithful service to Brahmanas and blessings, receiving blessings from them are very crucial for one's advancement. Prabhupada brings out so many lessons from this episode, how blessings of Vaishnavas will be very beneficial for our spiritual advancement. Are very necessary for our spiritual advancement. Demons must have missed the nectar, okay, because of Mohini Murthy's cheating. Demons have not received the nectar. But Bali Maharaj faithfully served the Brahmanas and in return, he received the nectar of blessings. So with the nectar of blessings, he could conquer the demigods who drank the asli nectar, the real nectar, right? Samudramanthan nectar. So, power of blessings, blessings of Vaishnavas or blessings of some great souls, Brahmanas, is more powerful than that nectar also. And ultimately, we need to understand that Lord's will is more powerful than anything else. There, Lord wanted to enjoy the pastimes of Samudramanthan as Korma Avatar, as Ajita, or as Mohini Murthy. In various ways, Lord was enjoying Samudramanthan pastimes. Now here, Lord is glorifying Bali Maharaj, okay, by becoming Vamandev. Fourth verse. Tam brahmana bha, tam brahmana bhrugava priyamana ayajayan vishvajita trinakam jigishamanam vidhina bhishishya Mahabhishekana Mahanubhava.
Mahabhisheka Mahanubhava. The Brahmana, descendant of Bhrigu Muni, were very pleased with Bali Maharaj, who desired to conquer the kingdom of Indra. Therefore, after purifying him and properly bathing him according to the regulative principles, they engaged him in performing the yajna known as Vishwajit.
So once His Holiness Radhana Swami Maharaj gave a Bhagavatam class on this episode, I will share a few points from that class also. Okay. So Bhrigu Maharaj's descendants engaged Bali in Vishwajit Yajna. Right? Bali Maharaj served them with faith, great faith. So he was engaged in Vishwajit Yajna. So Bali Maharaj desired to conquer Indra's kingdom. So he was empowered through the medium of Vishwajit Yajna. So, Radhanand Maharaj says, when great souls are pleased, they can bestow something unimaginable, like conquering Indra. So here, the descendants of Bhrigu, along with Sukracharya, so they were pleased with the service of Bali Maharaj. And Bali Maharaj, what was his impetus? What was his mood? He was very grateful. So, Sukracharya revived me, okay, when I was defeated in the battle, okay, when Indra just shot me down. Sukracharya revived me and brought me back to life. So out of that gratitude, so he offered faithful service. So when a service is done with certain motive, then it is not, it cannot please great souls. But when the service, the driving force behind that service is gratitude, very easily you can please that soul.
because it's clearly understood. Is he doing this service with a motive or out of pure gratitude? So that is clear here. So now, because he does such faithful service, grateful service to all these descendants of Bhrigu, they empowered him. They fulfilled his desire of conquering Indra's kingdom. Just like Ram, Lakshman, they pleased Vishwamitra by killing Marichi and Subahu. Subahu they killed, but Marichi was thrown away. But they protected the Yajna. So Vishwamitra was very much pleased. And all the sages around Vishwamitra, they were pleased. So Ram and Lakshman received so many weapons, like Bala, Atibala, and there are so many other weapons also. And Vishwamitra took him to Sita Swayamvar also. So when we actually give satisfaction to great spiritual personality, then through that satisfaction, Krishna showers unlimited blessings on us. And if we cause dissatisfaction to great souls, then Krishna is displeased and he withdraws the mercy. So receiving Krishna's mercy is in the hands of great souls. Okay, we can receive Krishna's mercy through the medium of pleasing great souls. So Maharaj says like this, just like a mother is there, if someone gifts the mother with, say, a nice sari, okay, very costly sari, you gift the mother and then she is happy, but you just slap her child, will she be happy? No. But even if you don't gift the mother, you just give a small chocolate or some cake or some sweet to the child, mother is happy. Mother is pleased with this person. Oh, this person is taking care of my child, or he is very affectionate towards my child. She is happy. Same thing, something similar happens with Krishna also. If you displease a Vaishnava, Krishna will not accept our service. If Krishna is pleased and devotee is displeased, actually Krishna is not pleased. So if Vaishnavas are pleased, then Krishna is automatically pleased. So pleasing spiritually advanced people can be done by our service, not the magnitude of service, but the attitude of service. Example is squirrel and Hanuman. So Ram is pleased with the service of both. So it's there, he is pleased with the attitude of service, not the magnitude of service. So magnitude may be very, there is a gulf of difference between what squirrel can do and Hanuman can do, but both are doing their best, so Ram is pleased. So one can please with one's service attitude, okay, and by our dealings with other God brothers also. When spiritual master has to be pleased, one's dealings with other God brothers also have to be very cordial and very nice. Once Gauranga Prabhu asked a question to Radhana Swami Maharaj in Vritrasura's episode. So Vritrasura was confident that although the entire world was against Vritrasura, okay, all the demigods and sages were desiring that he has to be killed. Sages were doing sacrifices that he has to be killed. And, even demons who were on the side of Vritrasura, they just left him on the battle. So Vritrasura was fighting alone. Even if he wins the battle, and whom will he show that victory to? Not a single person in the entire cosmic manifestation was on his side. Demons left him, demigods are already against him. So Vritrasura was still fighting on the battlefield. So Maharaj was explaining that Vritrasura was confident that by doing this activity, I am pleasing Guru and Krishna. So I will continue to do this activity. Okay, Vishnu told that my purpose of my existence is to be killed by this Vajrayuda, which was in the hands of Indra. So I will continue to fight, whatever may happen. So Vritrasura's focus was on pleasing Guru and Krishna only. So even the entire cosmic manifestation is against him, he is not so much bothered. So Gauranga Prabhu asked a question about this. If we also sometimes, the sadhakas also may say that I am happy with my serving my Guru, I have no issues with my Guru. So whatever the other Vaishnava community may think about me, it doesn't matter much, right? So he asked like that. Then if someone says like that, what should be the answer? Then Maharaj said that we are not Vritrasur. Our case is different from Vritrasur. So Narada Muni, now your guru wants you to have very healthy, cordial Vaishnava relationships with all other devotees. So that's the way you should please guru. So Maharaj gave one heavy point also that it's the nature of the mind to tweak the shastric statements to suit our case. Right? So that is not the case. What your guru wants, wants you to have very cordial relationship with other God brothers also. Basically, pleasing spiritual master is pleasing superior Vaishnava or spiritual master is the key to get Krishna's blessings. That is the theme here. Here, Sukracharya may be worrying about his maintenance, okay, as he does always. But Bali Maharaj was very honest, very grateful. Right? From Bali Maharaj's side, it was clear. But Sukracharya's side, he may be having some other agenda behind empowering Bali Maharaj or reviving Bali Maharaj or making him do Visvajit Yajna. He may have his own agendas. But Bali Maharaj was very honestly grateful to Sukracharya's support. So again, Radhananda Maharaj says, the greatest power of God is grace. And grace is sweet, grace is gentle. And it is more powerful than the wrath of God. So grace of God is more powerful than wrath of God. So wrath of God can destroy all the planets and universes to punish people, even the greatest rulers, to be brought down to their knees. But grace of God could not... grace of God can lift one from even the most fallen and miserable situation. So which is better? So destruction. Wrath of God can destroy the entire universe, but grace of God can uplift even the most fallen people. So which is better? So which is more greater? That definitely the grace. So destruction, Krishna need not be personally involved. His energies will do. But for protection, Krishna personally is involved. So, and that protection and that grace will come through the medium of Vaishnavas. When we please Vaishnavas, then everything will come. So, one should have some willingness to accept that grace. So, saintly persons who are connected to the grace of the God, who have taken shelter of Krishna, they want to give that grace to the whole world. But one should be very willing to accept that grace. Also, so these are few points that Maharaj was mentioning in his class. So one should be willing to accept the grace. For example, sun is there, sun is providing light. So we should be willing to accept that light. If someone just goes into a cave and then shuts up the doors of the cave with a big boulder, he will not access sunlight. He will just end up in vitamin D deficiency. Right? Sun is giving. But one should be willing to accept the grace also. Similarly, Vaishnavas also want to reconnect all the conditioned souls to the grace of Krishna, but one should be willing to accept it. Then fifth verse. Tato ratas kanchana pattana naddho hayascha haryashva turanga varnaha dhvajascha simhena vrajam virajamano hutasanat asahavirbhir ishat ishtat.
When ghee, clarified butter, was offered in the fire of sacrifice, there appeared from the fire a celestial chariot covered with gold and silk. There also appeared yellow horses like those of Indra and a flag marked with the lion.
Dhanuscha divyam purato panaddham tunav ariktau kavacham ta divyam pitamahastasya dadau chamalam amlana pushpam jalajam cha sukra.
A gilded bow two quivers of infallible arrows and celestial armor also appeared. Bali Maharaj's grandfather, Prahlad Maharaj, offered Bali a garland of flowers that would never fade, and Shukracharya gave him a conch shell.
Mm. So, 5th and 6th verses are describing what are the objects, various objects coming from the sacrificial fire. The celestial chariot came, yellow horses, flag marked with lion, bow, two quivers, armor, all this came out. And Pitamahascha. Pitamahastasya dadocha malam. So who is the Pitamaha of Bali Maharaj? Prahlad Maharaj. So Prahlad Maharaj came and offered a garland. Then Shukracharya. Amlana pushpam jalajam cha sukra. Shukracharya gave him a conch shell. Right? So jalajam. So jalaja means that which is born out of water. So conch shell is also born out of water. So jalajam sukraha. So Shukracharya gave him one conch shell and Bali Maharaj gave him a garland which is made of flowers which do not fade away. Amlana pushpam. So these are the blessings he received from great souls. Now, we understand this point that when we please great souls, Vaishnavas or spiritual master, so blessings will come. Then, one important point that Maharaj also highlights is the blessings are beyond the giver also. So when somebody is giving a blessing to someone or he is pleased with someone's nice service attitude, then he could empower him beyond his own range also. How? The person who is giving the blessings are just being an instrument of the grace of God. He is just being a transparent via medium. He is just being an instrument in the hands of the God to empower this person. Like that. So everything begins with a sincere attitude from the person who is seeking that blessings. From the person who is endeavoring to please this great soul. He will be empowered beyond the person who is apparently empowering him also. Okay, everything begins with a proper attitude from the follower. To be an instrument of the unlimited is the most fantastic way of living. Maharaj makes a brilliant statement. To be an instrument of the unlimited, Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the most fantastic way of the living. So do the best you can, so according to whatever you can do, and one should access the grace of the Supreme Lord. That is the power far beyond one's own self, right? So a power far beyond one's own self is manifesting through a humble instrument. Now here one nice observation is Prahlad Maharaj is empowering Bali, is giving blessings to Bali Maharaj. So now what is the whole purpose of Bali Maharaj here? He wants to go to heavenly planet and then conquer Indra and then defeat the demigods. So how could he receive a blessing from Prahlad Maharaj to fight against devotees, demigods? Right? What kind of blessing is this? How could Prahlad Maharaj give such a blessing to Bali Maharaj? Very nice perspective from Maharaj. That Prahlad Maharaj is giving a blessing here to Bali Maharaj to get shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead only. Now what will, immediately after receiving Prahlad Maharaj's blessing, what will Bali do? He will go and conquer Indra. Unless Bali Maharaj conquers Indra and then gets all the three worlds in his captivity, where is the opportunity for Vamandev to come and beg that? Okay, and give mercy to Bali Maharaj. So ultimately, what Bali Maharaj received from Prahlad Maharaj is a spiritual blessing. Purely spiritual blessing that reconnected with him, with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That enabled him to receive the grace of Vamandev only. Right? So what happened immediately is just a detail, is an event that led Bali Maharaj to receive the grace of Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is one nice learning that we need to understand here. So Prahlad Maharaj was praying for his grandson to get pure devotional service. Right? So and Bali Maharaj was humbling himself to receive Prahlad Maharaj's blessing. So it's actually a very deep thing.
So what Prahlad Maharaj was blessing him for is ultimately to go through whatever he has to go through to get Lord's grace. So, and how much now we understand that Hiranyakashipu received mercy because of Prahlad Maharaj's devotional service. Then how much Bali Maharaj has to receive? Bali Maharaj has a 1,000 times better attitude compared to Hiranyakashipu. If Hiranyakashipu receives mercy just because he is connected with Prahlad Maharaj, how much Bali Maharaj can receive? So, yes, Prabhuji.
About how the blessings given by someone can exceed their capability also. So, there is one section of Bhagavatam where Kubera is giving blessings of pure devotional service to Dhruva, you know. So, there I used to have the same question. How can somebody bestow a realization with bestow a blessing without themselves having realized it? You know, because the blessings of material benefits are bestowed by demigods, which they themselves cherish very much. And they also distribute to their followers, you know, like Indra and other demigods. And all. But the demigods may not know the value of moksha, you know, the liberation. You know. So there are some like Shiva who bestow moksha also, you know, and which may be not within the realization of average demigods. You know. But the Supreme Lord bestows pure love, you know, which is not understandable to those who are attached to the, you know, karma and jnana, you know, like that. So those who are addicted to karma and jnana cannot bestow prema, you know, Krishna prema. So my question was, even at that time also, Kubera being a treasurer of demigods, you know, how is he able to bestow Shuddha Bhakti to somebody like Dhruva? You know, I used to have that question also. So now you were saying about this. How, like Prabhupada said, I am a postal peon, you know, on behalf of my guru, and I am coming and delivering it. Although out of his humility he is saying that, but he is actually understanding what is he giving, you know. He is receiving it, relishing it, and then repeating it to others. Although he is claiming himself to be a postal peon. Similarly, if a demigod has to bestow Shuddha Bhakti to somebody, unless they relish it, then how can they bestow it? That was my question always. So here also when we say grace, you know, can be, blessings can be given by somebody merely by becoming an instrument, of a blessing which is not even realizable to them, which is beyond them, but it can pass through them. Yeah. Because in electricity we study, you know, the electric circuits and all, you know, for certain amount of electricity to pass through, certain amount of less resistance should be there. You know, the ohm value, you know. Mm. Otherwise it cannot pass. So how can it pass through somebody with a lesser realization? That was my question.
Okay. Actually, when I was reading Kuvera's episode also, Dhruva Maharaj episode also, I got the similar question. But Maharaj's statement, this statement of Maharaj, we could reconcile actually. I mean, whatever limited understanding I may have, I can share, Prabhu. Actually, this, when someone does sincere service and pleases a person, pleases another senior Vaishnava or whoever, so although he may not be able to bestow the highest thing, still through him, Supreme Lord will bestow on this person. That is the whole theme. So but my understanding is that just the well-wishers, the well-wishes of that person will is an appeal to the Supreme Lord to bestow on this person whatever he cannot bestow also. So his desire, he may not be having the ability, but he's desiring that this person gets pure devotional service. Just like when Kubera asked Dhruva Maharaj, what do you want? He said, I want pure devotional service only. I just want to remember the Lord always. So that remembrance Kubera may not be able to bestow, but Kubera is very much pleased with Dhruva Maharaj that he wanted him to receive that benediction. Right. Although he is not bestowing, because he also wanted him to receive that his sincere desire has to be fulfilled, Lord will give him.
So like that. And even in our just small, with my limited amount of service, whatever I have done in ISKCON here, so I can say that many times things go way beyond our capacity. But things will happen. So many are, we are just acting as a medium between some senior devotees and some newer devotees. So, but they are doing so much. Right? But I'm just standing in the middle, right? Just passing the information or some knowledge from, you know, senior devotees to the newer devotees, and then passing the instructions or whatever. And they are doing wonders also. And we can easily realize that I am not the doer. Right, I can never say that like I am blessing or anything like that, but I am just passing the information or whatever, but the newer devotees would be doing like wonders. Right, so definitely it's not a blessing, but just by being around, we can be acting as instruments of some senior devotees or Krishna or spiritual master, so that things may flow through us. They are just using us as an instrument only, and that's all I could understand. I think you can elaborate much better.
Example for this. Mm. Like Naren connected Srila Prabhupada to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Mm. You know, although he himself, we don't read about him anymore after that in Leelamrit. He goes along with Prabhupada and offers obeisance to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and they return back. The one good thing he did was to connect our Prabhupada to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Mm. You know. And both are great souls. Prabhupada is great soul, Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur is great soul. So he became a connector, which means he had an access to a very great soul, like Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur, and then he connected him by being an intermediate person. So that was one example I thought about, where Naren himself knew only one thing. He's a great sadhu. You know, I am in touch with a very great sadhu, I'll put you in touch. So he did like that. So when I heard about Kubera's example, that's what came to my mind. Somebody may be a demigod, but if they have connection to the Supreme Lord, we see in the many of the prayers he used to teach us before, many of the demigods even say that the pure devotees have no material desires. They are aware of the state of consciousness of a pure devotee, although they themselves don't aspire for it, you know, because probably due to their own leanings also. So, which means they can connect the living entities to the Supreme Lord and allow the Supreme Lord to bestow the blessings upon them by being an intermediate person. That was one thing that is one reason I could be convinced about this. And the second thing which you said about how things which are beyond human comprehension can happen through even a small devotee, because of his strong connection to parampara, you know, through parampara connection, Lord can do miraculous things through a devotee. Like through George Harrison, you know, so many things happened in the world around for the Krishna consciousness movement. Or those three couples sent to London, you know, such great things manifested in Krishna consciousness movement because they were connected to a very great source. So due to such connection, somebody apparently it's beyond his capacity, but it can they may do something which they themselves cannot realize. So that is, I am convinced about that. There's no doubt about that point which you said. Like one time, seven children were brought to the stage. You know, they were all made to stand one after another. As soon as they stood, you know, the entire audience of 1,000, 2,000 people clapped hands. You know. And the children looking at each other, why are they clapping hands at us? Because they were all LKG children, you know. And the teacher had put one board, one thermocol in front of them, WELCOME, like that. The only best thing the children did was they came in the same row in which teacher brought them. Otherwise, if they were fighting with one another, nobody would have clapped the hands. Correct, no? Because when they all stood together, the combination made a welcome song for the audience. So they clapped hands. Similarly, many times, a few devotees coming together and cooperatingly working, you know, may bring about a great result. They may be wondering, hey, we didn't do anything, you know, like that. So that miracle, I am convinced about, I have seen with my eyes also, many places. So that point is very well taken. Thank you.
7th or 6th verse. Evam saviprarjita yodhanartas taih kalpitasvastyayanotha vipran pradakshini kritya krita pranama prahradamamantya namaschakara.
When Maharaj Bali had thus performed the special ritualistic ceremony advised by the Brahmanas and had received by their grace the equipment for fighting, he circumambulated the Brahmanas and offered them obeisances. He also saluted Prahlad Maharaj and offered obeisances to him.
So, Bali Maharaj received Brahmanas' grace nicely, circumambulated them, offered the andavats also. So Bani is acknowledging the grace of Brahmanas by offering them respects. So in one context, Prabhupada says that offering dandavats would attract the mercy of even the worst possible enemies. And it would attract forgiveness from the greatest offenders also. Forgiveness for the greatest offenders also. Even if someone does a great offense, if he offers dandavat, prostrated dandavat in front of another person, he is obliged to, you know, be little merciful. Right? Prabhupada mentions like that somewhere. First canto, when Parikshit Maharaj was offering dandavats in front of all the sages assembled there, in that context Prabhupada says, so even the greatest offender could be forgiven if he prostrated, if he offers prostrated dandavats. And here Bali Maharaj was very eager to receive blessings. So now he is receiving material opulence. Immediately he was receiving material opulence. And because he had the temperament of being grateful for the grace received, in future he will be receiving spiritual opulence also, spiritual rewards also. So the temperament of being grateful and the attitude of pleasing great souls, so that is a very important quality. So immediately you may get some material benefits, but in future one will get spiritual rewards also. So this temperament was acknowledged. And here Radhananda Maharaj was mentioning, so real blessing is in the words, and when we actually apply their words in our life and live by the type of pure, humble and sincerely devotional character, then we are accepting the blessings. And with that blessings come unlimited grace, by which one will overcome all obstacles. So blessings come from the words. Words means instructions or other things. So when if we accepting the blessings means accepting those words, those instructive words, and applying them in our lives, right? Executing the services that they want us to do, or some instructions, some protocols that they want us to follow, rules and regulations. All this will enable one to please great souls. Then one will achieve grace. Now, Bali Maharaj is preparing to attack Indra. So, 8th verse onwards is a description of that. Atharu, atharu, hyaratham divyam bhrugudattam maharatha susragdharotha sannahya dhanvi dhanvi khadgi dhruteshudai hemangadala sadbahu spuranvakara kundala rarajarathamarudho dhishnyasta iva havyavat.
Then, after getting on the chariot given by Sukracharya, Bali Maharaj decorated with a nice garland, put protective armor on his body, equipped himself with a bow, and took up a sword and a quiver of arrows. When he sat down on the seat of the chariot, his arms decorated with golden bangles, and his ears with sapphire earrings, he shone like a worshipable fire.
Next. Tulyaishwarya bala sribhi svayuthair daityayuthapaih pibadbhir ivakham drigbhir dahadbhi paridhin iva vrito vikarshan mahatim asurim dhajinim vibhu yayavindrapurim svridham kampayan iva rodasi.
When he assembled with his own soldiers and the demon chiefs, who were equal to him in strength, opulence and beauty, they appeared as if they could swallow the sky and burn all directions with their vision. After thus gathering the demoniac soldiers, Bali Maharaja departed for the opulent capital of Indra. Indeed, he seemed to make the entire surface of the world tremble.
Tremble. Okay, from 12th verse till 22nd verse is a description of Indrapuri. So the details of Indra's kingdom. Ramyam upavanodhyanaihi Srimadbhir nandanadibhi Kujadvihanga mithunair Gayanmatta madhuvrataihi Pravalafala pushpuru Bharashaka maradrumaihi.
King Indra's city was full of pleasing orchards and gardens, such as the Nandan garden. Because of the weight of the flowers, leaves and the fruits, the branches of the eternally existing trees were bending down. The gardens were visited by pairs of chirping birds and singing bees. The entire atmosphere was celestial.
Hamsasarasa chakrahava Karandava kulaha Nalinyo yatra kridanti Pramada surasevitaha Akashagangeya devya Vritam parikha bhutaya Prakarena givarnena Satta lenonnatena cha Rukmapatta krupata krupataischa kapataischa dvaraihi sphatika gopuraihi jushtam vibhakta prapatham vishwakarma vinirmitam sabhachatvara rathyadhyam vimanair nyarbudhair yutam Sringatakair manimayair Vajravidruma vedibhi Yatranitya vayo rupaha Shyama viraja vasasa Bhrajante rupa vannaryo Hyarchibhir iva vahnaya.
Yes, read. King Indra's city was beautiful women protected by the demigods spotted in the gardens, which had lotus ponds full of swans, cranes, chakravakas and ducks. The city was surrounded by trenches full of Ganges water, known as Akashaganga, and by a high wall, which was the color of fire. Upon this wall were parapets for fighting. The doors were made of solid gold plates and the gates were of excellent marble. These were linked by various public roads. The entire city had been constructed by Vishwakarma. The city was full of courtyards, wide roads, assembly houses, and not less than 100 million airplanes. The crossroads were made of pearl and there were sitting places made of diamonds and coral. Everlasting, beautiful and youthful women who were dressed with clean garments, glittered in the city like fires and flames. They all possessed the qualities of Shyama.
Surastri kesha vibhrasta Navasaugandhika srajam Yatra modam upadaya Marga avati maruta Hemoja laksha nirgachat Dhumena Guru Gandhina Pandu పాండురేణ ప్రతిచ్ఛన్న మార్గే యాంతి సురప్రియాః ముక్తావితానైర్మణిహేమకూత్కేతుభిర్ నానాపటాకావలభీభిరావృతాం శిఖండీపారవత భగ్ననాదితాం వైమానికాస్త్రీ కలగీతమంగళాం.
The breezes blowing in the streets of the city bore the fragrance of flowers falling from the hair of the women of the demigods. Apsaras passed on the streets which were covered with the white fragrant smoke of aguru incense emanating from the windows with golden filigree. The city was shaded by canopies decorated with pearls, and the domes of the palaces had flags of pearls and gold. The city always resounded with the vibrations of peacock pigeons and bees, and above the city flew airplanes full of beautiful women who constantly chanted auspicious songs that was very pleasing to the ears. The city was filled with the sounds of mridangas, conch shells, kettle drums, flutes, and well-tuned stringed instruments, all playing in concert. There were constant dancing and the Gandharva's song. The combined beauty of the Indrapuri defeated beauty personified.
Mridanga shankha nagadundu bhiswanaihi satala veena marajeshta venubhi nrityai savadyair upadeva geetakair మనోరమాం స్వప్రభయా జితప్రభాం యామ్న వ్రజంతి అధర్మిష్టాః ఖలాభూత దురస్థ సటాః మానినః కామినో లుబ్ధా ఏభిర్హీనా వ్రజంతి యత్.
No one who was sinful, envious, violent towards other living entities, cunning, falsely proud, lusty, or greedy could enter that city. The people who lived there were all devoid of these faults.
So this is the qualification to enter heavenly planets. Right? No, sinful, envious, violent, cunning, falsely proud, lusty, greedy. So such people cannot enter the city, or they cannot stay there.
తం దేవధానీం సవరూథినీపైర్ సవరూథినీపతిర్. సో వరూథినీపతి, రైట్, ద కండెమ్నర్ ఆఫ్ సోల్జర్స్. బహిస్సమంతా రురుధే పృతన్యయ ఆచార్యదత్తం జలజం మహాస్వనం దద్మౌ ప్రయుంజాన్ భయమింద్ర యోషితాం.
బలి మహారాజ్, హు వాస్ ద కమాండర్ ఆఫ్ నంబర్లెస్ సోల్జర్స్, గ్యాదర్డ్ హిస్ సోల్జర్స్ అవుట్సైడ్ దిస్ అబోర్డ్ ఆఫ్ ఇంద్ర అండ్ అటాక్డ్ ఇట్ ఫ్రమ్ ఆల్ డైరెక్షన్స్. హీ సౌండెడ్ ద కాన్షెల్ గివెన్ హిమ్ బై హిస్ స్పిరిచువల్ మాస్టర్ శుక్రాచార్య, టస్ క్రియేటింగ్ అ ఫియర్ఫుల్ సిట్యువేషన్ ఫర్ ద ఉమెన్ ప్రొటెక్టెడ్ బై ఇంద్ర.
The previous verse, he says, Kamina lusty, greedy, they cannot enter the city. But we have heard in Yami Vampushpitam Vacham and all those verses, only those who have fruitive mentality to enjoy. And Prabhupada also says they go to heaven, those who still have material desires. It appears like they are free from all this.
Yeah.
Then what do they do there?
Actually, it's not explained. Last year when I was speaking on this, also same question came. I didn't elaborate on that. Basically, falsely proud, lusty, greedy. So these are many times found in the denizens of heavenly planets also. Still, that is a qualification to stay there. So one thing we can understand is if these qualifications are not there, because Sukadeva Goswami is saying like this, their tenure in heavenly planets will slowly get diminished, or whenever Indra or someone is exhibiting some lust or greed, so they are just fallen down from their positions. So their positions there are not secure. So as long as they're exhibiting some of these qualities, they will stay there. If they violate these things, then they will fall down. So we can understand that much. Lusty, greedy, proud, cunning, all these are like seen in the demigods sometimes. So those events are highlighted in the Shastras. But that event is happening for a short period of time, but remaining time they are continuing only in that. So that is the case here. Maghavamstvam abhipretya bale paramudyamam sarvadeva ganopeto gurum etat uvachah.
Seeing Bali Maharaj's indefatigable endeavor and understanding his motive, King Indra, along with the other demigods, approached his spiritual master Brihaspati and spoke as follows.
So one good thing in the demigods' behavior is, whenever there is a trouble, they will approach a superior person, either Brihaspati, spiritual master, or Brahma, or the Supreme Lord. They will approach and take support and help from them. So one more event where the demigods can fall off from their positions is when the time for the demons, okay, becomes prominent. So demons would attack the kingdom and the demigods will lose their positions. Or demigods will do some mistake, then they will lose their positions. Or by the supreme will of the Supreme Lord, if he wants to orchestrate some incident, then also demigods may have to fall from their positions as a part of Lord's plan. So 25th verse. So now 25th verse onwards, we will see the conversation between Indra, demigods, and Sukracharya. No, by Brihaspati. Questions by demigods. Bhagavan udyamo bhuyan balerna purva vairina avishahyam imam manye kenasit tejasorjita.
My lord, our old enemy Bali Maharaj now has new enthusiasm, and he has obtained such astonishing power that we think that perhaps we cannot resist his prowess.
Nainam kaschit kuto vapi prativyodhum adhishvarah piban iva mukhe nedam lihan iva disho dasha dahan iva disho drigbhi samvartagnir ivothita.
No one anywhere can contract his military arrangement, this military arrangement of Bali's. It now appears that Bali is trying to drink up the entire universe with his mouth, lick up the 10 directions with his tongue, and raise fire in every direction with his eyes. Indeed, he has arisen like the annihilating fire known as Samvartaka.
See, Piban eva mukhe needam. With his mouth, he is drinking the whole world, universe. Lihan eva disho disaha. And he is licking up all the 10 directions. Then dahan eva dasho drigbihi. Okay, all the directions he is dahan eva. He is appearing as if he is burning all of them. Then samvartagnir ivothitaha. He is looking like a samvartaka cloud, inhalating fire of samvartaka. There are samvartaka clouds. Here samvartaka fire is also mentioned. Samvartagnir. So that is the prowess of with which Bali Maharaj is attacking Indrapuri. So these are all power of blessings of the descendants of Bhrigu, okay, Brahmanas. Just the glance of Bali Maharaj made all the demigods very fearful. So these are all power of Brahmanas' blessings coming through the medium of Bali Maharaj. 27. Bruhi karanam etasya durdhashatvasya madripoha ojasaho balam tejo
Yata etat samudyamah.
Kindly inform me, what is the cause for Bali Maharaj's strength, endeavor, influence and victory? How has he become so enthusiastic?
So Bali, now Brihaspati is answering from 28th verse. Sri Guru Uvacha Janami Magavan Chhatror Unnatir Asya Karanam Shishyayopabhrutam Tejo Bhrugubir Brahmavadibhi.
Brihaspati, the spiritual master of the demigods, said, O Indra, I know the cause of your enemies becoming so powerful. The Brahmana descendants of Bhrigu Muni, being pleased by Bali Maharaj, their disciple, endowed him with such extraordinary power.
So here he is revealing the reason why Bali Maharaj has become so enthusiastic. Sometimes when somebody becomes very enthusiastic, the opposite party, seeing his enthusiasm, only half of his confidence will go down. So he need not do anything to attack him or anything like that. But so Bali Maharaj is showing that much prowess. So Brihaspati is explaining that Bali Maharaj pleased Bhrigu's descendants, so he was bestowed with extraordinary power. So Prabhupada here in this purport speaks about power of blessings. So Bali Maharaj's prowess was not his own, but the power of his guru, Sukracharya, right? So here Bali Maharaj is representing a superior power in being enthusiastic, right? He may be attacking the demigods and then he may be acquiring the kingdom, everything. But ordinarily he would not have done everything on his own, right? Beyond his capacity also, he was empowered by the blessings of Brahmanas. He was acting as an instrument of the blessings of Brahmanas here to do a job, impossible job of conquering the heavenly kingdoms. Chakravarti Pad says, Brahmanas gave an exchange of their own powers to Bali, who had ordered, offered to them everything out of extreme devotion and faith. So Bali Maharaj offered everything out of devotion and faith to Brahmanas, and Brahmanas in return gave him full blessings, full powers. Thus, it was their power, not Bali's power. Therefore, it is difficult for you to counteract it. If it is Bali's power, with your Kshatriya powers, prowess, you may be able to counteract in Bali. But it is Brahmana's power coming through Bali, so you cannot counteract. So here, one observation Chakravarti Pad gives is, we are not less powerful than them. So Bhrigu's descendants, they empowered Bali because of his service. So now we, Brihaspati and other Brahmanas guiding the demigods, we are not less powerful than them. If we become pleased with you, demigods, then we will also empower you. Right? So we are not sufficiently pleased with you, or you have not done sufficiently good deeds that are pleasing to us. That is indicated indirectly. Like that. So Prabhupada gives this. Yasya prasadat bhagavat prasado. By the pleasure of spiritual master, one can get extraordinary power, especially in spiritual advancement. So blessings of spiritual master are more powerful than one's personal endeavors for such advancement. If one does his bhajan, bhakti, keeping aside the instructions of spiritual master, then his progress is, it's questionable. He cannot make advancement. Okay, he may be apparently doing wonders, but ultimately he displeases spiritual master only. So, again, not only the blessings of spiritual master directly, but also the community of Vaishnavas also. So, in the name of pleasing spiritual master and Krishna, so if we displease other Vaishnavas, we will get the reaction, right? Ultimately, it causes the displeasure of Krishna and Guru only. So, we have seen that case study, Sanat Kumar Prabhu presented in the seminar, Art of Following Authority. So, one case study is there. So one person is directly getting instruction from Guru Maharaj, and then he is acting, he is doing the service in his own way and causing disturbance to the whole temple management. And many complaints are coming from him. So that was a case study there.
like that. So there is one story in this connection. That Ramanujacharya was there. He had a wealthy disciple and he had a poor disciple, right? So, but one of them received a message that Ramanujacharya is coming, okay, for lunch, okay. And then he became ecstatic, and then he forgot to receive these disciples who got that message properly. Right, he neglected them, but he was making arrangement to receive Ramanuja. So Ramanuja did not go to that disciple's house, he went to someone else's house. So who received these Vaishnavas also properly? Like that. So the Narottamdas Thakur, our Prabhupada quotes, Guru Mukha Padma Vakya, especially for spiritual advancement, one should carry out the bona fide orders of spiritual master. With the Parampara system, one can thus be endowed with original spiritual power coming from Supreme Personality of Godhead. Evam parampara praptam. Evam rajarshayo vidhu. Sometimes blessings may not be palatable. Right? They may not be according to our expectations always. But one has to leave the decision in the hands of Guru Maharaj and then follow whatever is told. So for when Vishwamitra came to Dasarath Maharaj, Dasarath Maharaj said, everything I have now in my possession is only because of the instruction or blessings of great souls like you. Now myself and my entire army, right, whole kingdom is at your disposal, is at your service. Tell us whatever you want to do. Okay, we are ready to receive your instruction. Then Vishwamitra said, give me Ram. Then Dasarath could not execute that instruction. Right, he was hesitating. Finally, he had to send Ram and Lakshman, but initially there was a hesitation. So when you are surrendering or when you are expressing your submissiveness or surrender to a great soul, so what they expect from you may not be always pleasing to you or comfortable for you. But still one has to abide them. Now, here our Brihaspati, in the 28th verse, he said that Bali Maharaj pleased these descendants of Bhrigu, Brahmanas, and then he got this extraordinary power. Right? So now Indra may say, shall I go out and fight with him now or not? So Indra may question like that. So now our Brihaspati will respond to that. Ojasvinam balam jetam. Nasamartho asti kaschana bhavadvidho bhavan vapi varjayitveshwaram harim vijeshyati nagopyenam brahmatejas samedhitum nashashaktah purasthatum krishnasya yathajanah.
Neither you nor your men can conquer the most powerful Bali. Indeed, no one but the Supreme Personality of Godhead can conquer him, for he is now equipped with the supreme spiritual power, Brahma Tejas. As no one can stand before Yamraj, no one can now stand before Bali Maharaj.
So Indra may be getting excited, so I will go out and fight with Bali Maharaj. But Brihaspati says, no one except the Supreme Personality of Godhead can stand before him. Are you Supreme Personality of Godhead? No. So you cannot conquer. Okay. No one can stand before Yamaraj. Okay. Similarly, no one can stand before Bali Maharaj. So that, to that extent, Bali Maharaj was empowered by the blessings of all these great souls. Now we have many examples in this connection. Even the Supreme Personality of Godhead also takes blessings from elders. For example, Lord Ram, he takes blessings from his parents, Dasarath, Kaushalya and other elders, Vasishta, Vishwamitra, and he was personally doing massage of his guru's feet. So Ram was massaging Vishwamitra's feet. Who is Vishwamitra in comparison to the Supreme Lord, Ramachandra? Right? So why he had to be obedient and seek to collect blessings from many saints in his vanvas? And Lord Ram went to an exile for 14 years, so he was wandering in different forests and meeting the hermitages of so many sages, and he is collecting blessings.
So Lord Ram was teaching us, your success is not your endeavor, but by the blessings of great souls. So Lord Ram is acknowledging the importance of the blessings of great souls. So Radhanath Maharaj says, should we aspire for blessings from unqualified people also? That was the question. Then Maharaj says, yes. Yes, we should look for blessings everywhere. So we have that popular episode from the Journey Home book where one leprosy-affected woman was giving blessing and Maharaj just ran to take that, right? He says, she was the most beautiful woman I have ever seen. Her eyes are filled with compassion and an eagerness to bless someone like that. So now we need to understand what qualification all the sages or other jivas may have to bless Lord Ram or Krishna. So Krishna was receiving blessings. When Krishna was going out of Hastinapur or entering Dwaraka, there were so many brahmanas who were blessing Krishna. There, Prabhupada writes a brilliant purport that these brahmanas, although they are living entities only in the creation, in the unlimited creation of the Supreme Lord, they can bless the Supreme Lord also, and it is not a contradiction. Right? So Krishna can receive blessings from them also. Yudhishthira Maharaj, right? Krishna offers obeisances to Yudhishthira Maharaj's feet, he touches his feet, and Yudhishthira Maharaj blesses him also. Right? So it's not about who is upper or who is lower. It's about collecting good wishes and blessings from everyone. So the glory of Yudhishthira Maharaj is that Yudhishthira Maharaj collected blessings everywhere, even from the opposite party. Bhishma and Drona have given their profuse blessings to Yudhishthira Maharaj, not Duryodhan. They may be standing on the side of Duryodhan and they may be fighting against Pandavas on the side of Duryodhan. Still their blessings are not with Duryodhan. Their blessings are very much with Pandavas only, Yudhishthira Maharaj only. And Duryodhan was collecting curses from everywhere. Ravana was collecting curses from everywhere. Right? So Ram was collecting blessings from so many sages, and he had some well-wishers. Ram had some well-wishers from the side of Ravana also. Vibhishan and even Kumbhakarna also suggested something against Ravana. Right? Why don't you give Sita back to Ram? You never consulted anyone before bringing Sita, and now you are engaging everyone, okay, in fulfilling your desire. So like that. Arjuna collected so many blessings, but Karna collected a lot of curses. So that is why no one could stand in front of Yudhishthira Maharaj or Arjuna or Hanuman or Ram in the battle, because they have unlimited blessings from so many people like that. And what attracts blessings? Submissiveness and humility. So collecting blessings doesn't need expertise or diplomacy. Sometimes diplomacy may be working, like Duryodhana pleased Durvasamani to such an extent that he convinced Durvasamani to go to Pandavas and ask for, food, lunch, after Draupadi had taken lunch. So that involved some negative agenda, but it generally doesn't work so. So collecting blessings doesn't need expertise or diplomacy. It needs genuine humility and submissiveness. Arrogance and pride can never attract blessings. So now one point here is, definitely we will attract blessings of so many Vaishnavas by doing so many services. But if we become proud of our services, if we think we are the doers of those services, not only that we will lose the opportunity to receive blessings, we will lose the desire to receive blessings. Right? If I am thinking I am the doer of whatever I am doing, I don't feel the need to accept blessings of anyone. I don't feel the need only. So I will lose the desire to accept blessings only. And after hearing so much about blessings, how can we give up the desire to accept blessings? If Ram and Krishna are eager to receive blessings, so how can we give up the desire to receive blessings? But if one has the mentality of doer and then mentality of accepting credit for whatever he does and not passing credit to someone else, he will lose the desire to accept blessings. Right? It's like, I can do things on my own. Why do I need blessings or empowerment or permission or approval or help or support from someone like that? Now, Lord Ram, he killed so many demons, right? But he was not lifting the bow without the blessings of Vishwamitra. Vishwamitra gave him approval and blessings. So he offered obeisances to Vishwamitra and then said, now you can go, and then lift the bow. Till that point, Ram was not doing anything. He has the ability. Okay. Now, Indra is questioning. Please give a mantra to counteract this situation. Now, Brihaspati is responding in the 30th verse. Tasmanayalayam utsrujya yuyam sarve trivishtapam yatakalam parikshanto pratikshanto yatashatror viparyayah.
Therefore, waiting until the situation of your enemies is reversed, you should all leave this heavenly planet and go elsewhere where you will not be seen.
So this is Brihaspati's blessing. You go out of heaven. So now Indra's question is, when and how will Bali be defeated? He is asking us to go out. So will there be a day where Bali will be defeated and we will reoccupy our positions? So 31st verse, Brihaspati is asking, is telling, Yesha viprabalo darka sampratyurjita vikrama tesham eva pamanena sanubandho vinangshyati. This is an important verse. Yes.
Bali Maharaj has now become extremely powerful because of the benedictions given him by the Brahmanas. But when he later insults the Brahmanas, he'll be vanquished along with his friends and assistants.
So, esha vipra balodarkaha samprati urjita vikramaha. So, now currently he is flourishing because Brahmanical power is invested in him. Now, if he offends that Brahmanas, if he disrespects those Brahmanas, then that will vinangshyati, that will be vanquished. Right? You wait for an opportunity where Bali Maharaj disobeys his spiritual master Sukracharya, then you will get it back. Right? So this is, in one sense, it's on an external level. Bali Maharaj displeasing Sukracharya and losing all material opulence is, conventional or something like that. But the internal reason is, it's a glorious act that Bali Maharaj had done. So that has a different, that's a different discussion. So here the discussion is about empowerment from Brahmanas. When that empowerment from Brahmanas is withdrawn, then he will lose the material opulence. So we will have the discussion within those limits only. But Bali Maharaj disobeying Sukracharya is a great act. It is a devotional service on his part. And then it is bona fide for him to reject a non-bona fide guru who was asking him not to surrender to Vishnu. 31st verse. Now in the purport, Prabhupada says, Brihaspati predicted that Bali would be vanquished when he insulted the Brahmanas by whose grace he has become so powerful. So Bali's enemies were naturally anxious to know when that opportune moment would come. So Brihaspati pacified Indra by assuring him he could see that in future Bali would defy the orders of Sukracharya to pacify Vamandev. Prabhupada clarifies here, Bali Maharaj rejecting of Sukracharya's orders. To advance in Krishna consciousness, one can take all risks. To please Vamandeva, Bali risked defying spiritual master's orders. Because of this, he would lose all his property, yet because of devotional service to the Lord, he would get more than expected. And in the 8th Manvantara, he would become Indra again. Like that. Now 32nd verse. Evam sumantritarthaste gurunarthanudarshina hitvatrivishtapam jagmur girvana kamarupina.
Sukdev Goswami continued, The demigods, being thus advised by Brihaspati for their benefit, immediately accepted his words. Assuming forms according to their desire, they left the heavenly kingdom and scattered without being observed by the demons.
So this Kamarupina, Girvanaha Kamarupina means demigods are Kamarupina. They can assume any form that they like. So in disguise, they just left heavenly kingdom and then they just ran away. So Indra's property is not like our buying a 5 cents land or 5 acres land or our getting a job like that. It takes extremely pious activities. It takes sense control, 100 ashwamedha yajnas, so many austerities for lifetimes. He acquires unlimited pious credits, then he will be given the post of Indra. And that post is very insecure. Right? It's not worth enduring so much just to attain heavenly kingdom like that. Now Bali Maharaj will just take it, everything, and enjoy it. So Kama Rupinaha, Girvana Kama Rupinaha. In a different form, Indra has to hide somewhere else. Like that. So now we'll continue the discussion after a break. But before that, I request Prabhuji, this is Sadasham Prabhu, for some comments on whatever. 33. From 33 onwards, we have the description where Bali Maharaj is securing his position. Deveshwartha nalineshu balirvairochana purim devadhanim adhishtaya vasham ninye jagatrayam. Tam Vishwajan Jainam Sishyam Bhrgavas Sishyavat Salaha Shatenahaya Medhanam Anuvartam Ayajayan.
The Brahman are descendants of Bhrigu, being very pleased with their disciple who had conquered the entire universe, now engaged him in performing 100 Ashwamedha Yajna sacrifices.
So, by great sacrifices, Indra was made the king of heaven. But here, Brahmanas decided that although Bali Maharaj was sitting on Indra's throne, he would not be able to stay there unless he performed some sacrifices. He has to make his position very secure, at least as many as Indra has done. Right? That's why they are encouraging some sacrifices. Tatastaddanubhavena bhuvanatraya vishrutam Kirtim Dikshu Vitanvana Sareja Uruda Udurad Iva.
When Bali Maharaj performed these sacrifices, he gained a great reputation in all directions throughout the three worlds. Thus, he shone in his position like the brilliant moon in the sky.
Bubhujeja Sriyam Svridham Dvijadeva Palambhitam Kritakrityam Ivatmanam Manyamano Mahamanaha.
Because of the favor of the Brahmanas, the great soul Bali Maharaj, thinking himself very satisfied, became very opulent and prosperous and began to enjoy the kingdom.
So Bali Maharaj is now finally situated as the king of heaven and then enjoying a prosperous kingdom. So Prabhupada speaks about gradual elevation to Krishna consciousness in the purport. Brahmanas are Dvijadeva. They guide the human society in becoming happy by satisfying Vishnu. So Kshatriyas are Naradeva. Brahmanas are Dvijadeva, Kshatriyas are Naradeva. According to Brahmanas' advice, Kshatriyas keep law and order so that Vaishyas and Sudras may properly follow regulative principles. So Deva is actually referring to Supreme Personality of Godhead. Oh, that's how that chapter completed. So now we'll take the next chapter. Prabhuji, can you please share some points about Bali Maharaj conquering?
The points you shared on the power of blessings, I may have to digest them again by going through them. Many of the points which you said were very amazing, especially in the last one I liked very much, which you said about collecting blessing and collecting curses. You know, that was one very nice section. And the one before also, a few verses before that, the demons pleasing their spiritual master. There also, there was something about the blessing of Guru came. That was, I think, in seventh verse, is it? No. I think third one. Yeah, correct. Pleasing Guru, yeah. That is fourth one, I think. Yeah, that was also. So these are two very vital topics which you touched on today. That is, pleasing the Guru brings potency to the disciple. Power, opulence, potency, everything increases. And similarly, the opposite example is of the devatas displeasing Brihaspati and losing all their opulences and the lashchar and everything. So that was very wonderfully discussed. And those points like, you know, the greatest power of God is His grace, and how the grace of God can, you know, deliver all the fallen souls. And comparison of, actually the grace of God coming through Guru, correct now, by the pleasure of Guru. That was a very wonderfully discussed point. And another purport Prabhupada says that in any field, the student who pleases the teacher, you know, becomes expert. Whether it's Bharatanatyam, or whether it's Carnatic music, or whether it is archery, you know, even in mundane fields. And in the spiritual field, it's all the more important, he says, because the like the formula of Yasya Prasadat Bhagavad Prasado, formula is all the more important in the spiritual field. In the material field, of course, a good and attentive student who is very careful in applying the instructions of the coach or the teacher, you know, gains you know, special skills that exceeds others generally. But in the field of spiritual life, there are a few parameters you spoke also about what are the things that help a disciple to please the Guru. So one was about the attitude. You know, the attitude of service is greater than the magnitude of service, which you said. It was very nice. And also, there are ways to directly please the Guru and indirectly please the Guru also. So most people in the world always try to please the Guru directly only. Like one devotee used to come to Pune temple only when his Guru comes. You know? He would come and put a big garland for him. So Guru told him that, you know, thank you for your great love with which you are offering me a big garland, but it will be nice, you know, if you also visit the temple regularly when I am not coming here also. He was telling. So generally people think I can please the Guru superficially by doing something that will immediately please him. Like the same Guru, he saw in Guru Puja time, one brahmachari was jumping like anything, you know, up and down. So the Guru asked me later on in the room, hey, he jumps so high, seems to be very enthusiastic. I said, Maharaj, I can check with the managers. And when he checked with the managers had a lot of complaints about him. Because they said he only jumps in front of you very nicely, but he doesn't do the service given to him, you know, they said. So then the Guru told him that, you know, you cannot have a show bottle enthusiasm in front of me, you know. You should earn overall good name by your service, you know, that you are allotted to do. So you are trying to please me by showing a smiling face and enthusiasm, raising hands and dancing, because you know that I occasionally visit. So you are showing occasional enthusiasm, he said. But you have to show a steady enthusiasm by submission to the service, he said. So directly pleasing Guru, most people try, which often doesn't appeal to the mind and heart of Guru. But if a disciple steadily tries to please Guru, even in front of the Guru, apparently he doesn't make an endeavor to please also. That steadiness and consistency in endeavoring to please the Guru with body, mind, words and heart, that can actually please the spiritual master. So that was I like that point also about the attitude of service. And also pleasing Guru not only means only pleasing Guru, but also pleasing all included, so that ultimately Guru will be pleased by our overall endeavor to please all living entities. That was a very nice point. And the later part of the chapter where you spoke about the blessings, I heard that Govind Prabhu, when he was going abroad first time, he was taking blessings of some of the congregation devotees also, you know. So he was telling that generally when we are brahmacharis, we think we are more in a position of giving and others are more in a position of receiving, we think. And we think about it all the more with respect to congregation. Because generally congregation respects brahmacharis a lot and they sit and listen. So he was telling, but actually Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu teaches to receive blessing even from the well-established grihastha devotees. He was telling, just like Krishna Chandra Prabhu and such kind of devotees and all. So the aspiration to receive blessings can only arise in a humble heart, which feels the need for receiving the blessing. Otherwise, when one thinks I am potent, I am powerful, I am competent, and I have the abilities, and I am self-satisfied, then such a heart becomes a complacent heart, and it doesn't seek, it doesn't seek the blessings, or it doesn't feel the need. That was a very wonderful point I liked very much. Because, so I think that came in the topic of collecting blessing and collecting curses, I think. It was a very nice point, yeah. And also we see when Indra killed Vritrasura, he had to hide in the Manasarovar lake inside the lotus, at the lotus feet of Lakshmi, you know, who he sort of healed him and helped him come out of his sinful situation. Yeah. And also, which means he was blessed by Lakshmi, then he was blessed by the sages who performed many, many yajñas, also chanting the holy name they performed. So they reinstated Indra to his position by bringing forth abundant blessings upon him. Okay. So this point is the repetitive theme, as we saw also now. Bali Maharaj was blessed, he was elevated. Indra was cursed by Brihaspati due to his offense, and he was degraded. So this is a very plain point that the Shastra say about, there is one verse, you know, Ayushriyam Yasho Dharmam. Lokana Ashisha Evacha Hantisrayamsi Sarvani Pumso Mahadatikrama. That verse talks about all the different opulences that are lost, that are destroyed by a Mahadatikrama, by a great offense or offense to a great soul. Similarly, there are also opulences mentioned which one receives by pleasing a great soul. So these are very vital themes, because generally, as sadhakas, our endeavor is on, our focus is on our own endeavors. Because the wrong notion is work hard and enjoy, which is actually a Western phenomenon. Western world, they think work hard and enjoy. In India, people certainly believe in the fate and the daiva. They know one thing, you know, whatever has to happen at whatever time only will happen, and unless God blesses us, we cannot be happy. Many Indians are convinced about it. That is actually a fact. Our endeavor and mercy of Hari Guru Vaishnavas. Out of the two, in this section we understand that our endeavor may be puny, but if the Hari Guru Vaishnavas mercy is enormous, then one can be promoted and elevated to a very great position.
Thank you.
The same is true for the control of the senses also. If one has received blessings of Guru, then one can control the senses easily. And then by one's own strenuous endeavor through austerities and penances and deprivation of the senses and those things.
Thank you. Also, I just remember that it is said that Guru must be pleased. It's not that I must please Guru. I only want to please Guru. Okay? Others, whether they please Guru or not, I don't mind. Or whether I cooperate with them so that they can also please Guru, that also I don't mind. I have to please Guru. So that could be one neophyte attitude. So Guru must be pleased. So whether I am in the forefront, okay, for the pleasure of that Guru or not. So that's a detail. So is Guru pleased or not? So it's like a bona fide servant seeks the pleasure of Guru. Like that, if Guru is pleased if some service is done, then he will assist in the proper execution of that service, than he himself personally going infinite and then trying to find out some means how to see the smile on Guru's face. Yes. Thank you, Guru. One more point I just recollected on that theme, blessings are beyond the beyond the giver. Blessings could be beyond the giver also. I just saw myself repeating many times I just refer to Maharaj's lectures and then repeat some of the statements, right? And I spend very little time in referring to that statement sometimes, okay? And then I repeat it, and then I continue with my other services. But when I spoke it, some devotees, because they are in very good attitude, right, they receive that, and then they remember it for a long time, and they try to implement it for a long time, right? A speaker may be speaking few things, right, by referring to some other, you know, acharyas or whatever. But the hearer, if he is very attentive and very eager and very humble, so he will make more advantage out of that principle than the person who is speaking also. It's not his point. So somehow that point has to reach. It's Krishna's plan that that point has to reach and inspire that person, and then it will come. Once Radhananda Maharaj also said that sometimes when we give class, the most spaced out class that we have ever given could bring the best possible transformation in the hearer, right? Or the most eloquent and then shastrically, you know, rich class that we have given could not impress anyone, okay? Could not be of much use to anyone also. That could happen. So Maharaj was, you know, giving a message to speakers that, so don't think you are doing something. You are just being an instrument in the Acharya's hands, in Prabhupada's hands. So Prabhupada wrote all purports, and when a speaker is repeating those statements, depending on the attitude of the hearer, one will be benefited by the statements of Prabhupada. So speaker is just playing the role of an instrument, a messenger. That's so this is like one small thought I got now. Now, earlier when demons were killed, then mother of demons, Diti, was in distress. Then she went to Kashyapa and then pleased him by her service, and then got some you know, mantra to kill Indra. Okay, whatever. She wanted to kill Indra. But here, the mother of demigods, Aditi, no, she is displeased. She is in distress now, distress. Because all the demigods had to leave the heavenly kingdom and go out in Kama Rupinaha, in some other different forms, and then they are hiding somewhere else. So demons captured the throne. Now Aditi became very afflicted. So she wanted some means through which her sons, the demigods, can regain their opulence. So she is approaching Kashyapa. That is the subject matter of 16th chapter. First 20-25 verses are about 23 verses are about are some kind of prelude to the whole topic, which is Payovrata process. So from 24th to 25th verse onwards, we have the process of Payovrata. There we will just read the description there. So we'll discuss the first few verses. Sri Suka Uvacha Evam Putreshu Nashteshu Deva Mata Aditis Tada Hrite Trivishtape Daityaihi Paryatatpyad Anathavat.
Shukdev Goswami said, O King, when Aditi's son, the demigods, and thus dissipated from heaven, and the demons had occupied their places, Aditi began lamenting as if she had no protector.
So, Anathavat, as if she is anatha, no anatha. Okay, she is lamenting for the you know, lamentable position of her sons. So demigods had no other alternative but to run away in disguise. So their prestige has been crushed. Their physical facilities have been taken away. The same thing will happen with Pandavas. So Pandavas' opulence is taken away and they were exiled. You go out for 12 years, and in the 13th year, you just hide yourselves. Right? If we find you, again 12 years, vanvas. So that was the condition of Pandavas. But Kunti was not exiled, but she underwent tremendous amount of distress because of Pandava's bad condition, right? Distressed condition. Similarly, when sons are afflicted by some distress, the equal amount of distress is experienced by mother also. Second verse. Ekada kashyapastasya ashramam bhagavan agat nirutsavam niranandam samadher viratas chirat.
After many, many days, the great powerful sage Kashyapa Muni arose from a trance of meditation and returned home to see the ashram of Aditi, neither jubilant nor festive.
Hmm. So ashram has become nirutsavam niranandam. No utsaha, no enthusiasm, no ananda, no happiness there. So ashram became like that. Sapatnim dina vadanam kritasana parigraha sabhajito yatha nyayam idam maha kurudvaha.
O best of the Kurus, when Kashyapa Muni had been properly received and welcomed, he took his seat and then spoke as follows to his wife Aditi, who was very morose.
So he saw his wife Aditi, Deena Vadanam, very pale face, dry face. So he started speaking. So from 4th verse till 10th verse is Kashyap Muni's enquiries about the condition. Okay, Kashyap Muni enquires Diti. So 4th verse is describing about prescribed duties. Okay. We will read the verse. Apyabhadram na vipranam bhadre loke dhunagatam na dharmasya na lokasya mrityoschanda anuvartinaha.
O most gentle one, I wonder whether anything inauspicious has now taken place in regards to religious principles, the Brahmana or the people in general who are subject to the whims of death.
So are you not following the prescribed duties, right, towards Brahmanas or people in general? Was that the reason for your dejection? So there are 10 causes of dejection which are mentioned in the enquiries of Yudhishthira Maharaj to Arjuna in the first canto of 14th chapter. So when somebody appears morose, what could be the possible causes for his moroseness? So that we can learn, one theme is we can learn it from 1.14. Now this is another episode, another section where what could be the possible causes for a family woman could be dejected. So there, what were the possible causes? A kshatriya could be dejected. Okay, not pleasing a worthy woman, or not being able to protect some surrendered souls, are defeated by someone else, or health issues. So they are different reasons which Yudhishthira Maharaj asked Arjuna. So here are some questions. These are meant for grihasthas, right? A grihastha, when will he be displeased? First thing is, if he cannot follow prescribed duties, okay, that he is supposed to follow, then there will be displeasure, there will be distress. So prescribed duties for the inhabitants of material world are regulative principles which are meant for well-being of everyone. Had they been disobeyed? That was his first question. So Prabhupada speaks about few things. One who is satisfied in household life for sense gratification is called a grihamedhi. That is in the next verse. So, 5th verse. Apivakushalam kinchid griheshya grihamedhini dharmasya arsasya kamasya yatra yogo yayoginam.
O my wife, who are very much attached to the household life, if the principles of religion, economic development and satisfaction of the senses are properly followed in household life, one's activities are as good as those of a transcendentalist. I wonder whether there have been any discrepancies in following these principles.
So second thing, are there any discrepancies in following dharma, artha, kama? So dharma, artha, kama, these things have to be properly followed. Okay. So here he is addressing Aditi as Grihamedhini. Grihamedhini means she is a woman, household woman, right? Household woman attached to household life. Okay, such a woman is called Grihamedhini. So Grihamedhini means one who is satisfied in household life for sense gratification. That's how he is addressing. Prabhupada speaks the nature of Grihamedhis. Householders pursue sense gratification in the field of activities performed for material results. Yan maithunadi grihamedhi sukham hitucham kandu yanena karayo eva dukkha dukkham. Prahlad Maharaj says, so that is about nature of grihamedhis. They live in house for fulfilling sense gratification desires. So the ideal household life is what Prabhupada says here. Vedic process is so comprehensive that even in householder life, one can adjust his activities according to regulative principles of dharma, artha, kama, moksha. One's aim should be to achieve liberation. But because one cannot at once give up sense gratification, in the shastras, there are injunctions prescribing dharma, artha, kama, moksha. Right? No sense, you cannot give up sense gratification completely, then such a person is recommended regulated sense gratification under the headings of dharma, artha, kama, moksha. So dharmasya apavargasya nartho yartho upayopakaltate. What is it? Dharmasya ekantasya what is kamo labhaya smrita. Occupational engagements meant for ultimate liberation. They are meant for ultimate liberation, not for gain. This is first canto, second chapter, ninth verse. So those who are in household life should not think that religion is meant to improve the process of householder sense gratification. Generally, karma is what they do dharma, means religious pious activities to get artha, okay, money, to fulfill their kama, sense gratification, and they forget moksha. Okay, that is the routine of regular household people, grihamedhis. But household life is also meant for advancement in spiritual understanding, by which one can ultimately gain liberation from material clutches. Don't just be involved in dharma, artha, kama only. You should think about moksha also. That's our purpose. That is household, ideal household life, where the householder thinks about moksha also, not just dharma, artha, kama. But here, Kashyap Muni is referring to Aditi as Grihamedhini. That's why he inquired only about dharma, artha, kama. One more reference, I remember. Narada Muni, he asks Uttanapada. When he goes to Uttanapada after Dhruva Maharaj's departure from his kingdom, he asks, what about your dharma, artha, kama? Prabhupada writes in the purport, someone who is so absorbed in his political affairs, he has no time to think about moksha. That's why Narada Muni is inquiring Uttanapada only about dharma, artha, kama. Okay, sixth verse. Sixth verse is describing about improper guest reception. Sixth and seventh verse has a common theme, improper guest reception. That could be another cause for householders' moroseness, dejection. Apivathitayo bhyeta bhyetya kutumbasaktaya tvaya grahat apujita yata pratyutthanena va kvachit.
I wonder whether because of being too attached to the members of your family, you failed to properly receive uninvited guests, who therefore were not welcomed and went away?
So, did you not receive guests properly? Okay. Improper reception of uninvited guests. So, this is important. So even if someone is not welcomed, even if he has not sent a mail and contact us at ecovillage.rc.in, still if he just drops in as a spontaneous guest in GEV, how eager is the person to receive? That is another formula, right, for pleasure in household life. Right? One has to receive a guest even in enemy. What to speak of an unannounced guest? Right? So Prabhupada quotes that Grihe Shatrum Api Praptam Vishvastam Akutobhayam. One has to receive an enemy when he comes to the house in such a way that he forgets his enmity. He forgets all fear. I am in my enemy's place. Okay, in the lemon juice that they gave, there is no poison at all. He has to confidently drink it. So that's how he has to be confident. So at least standing up, offering a seat, a glass of water, so that the guest will not be displeased. One has to do at least this. Atithi. The very definition of atithi means he has no tithi to come. Right? He comes without an invitation. Even renunciants also have some responsibility of guest reception when they are living in an institutional setup of temple. So, of course, in an institutional setup, guest reception is made into a department where a few devotees allocated, they have to take care. But in grihastha life, they only have to take care of everything. Okay, household life means husband and wife have the responsibility for everything. Plumbing department, electricity department, right? Kitchen, cooking department, purchase department, guest reception department, everything is those two only, husband and wife only. So that is the responsibility of household life. Now, 7th verse is an extension to the 6th verse. Griheshu yeshvati thayo narchita salilair api yadinirriyanti tenunam feru raja grihopamaha.
Homes from which guests go away without leaving, without having been received even with an offering of a little water, are like those holes in the field which are the homes of jackals.
Okay. If there is no proper guest reception, homes become holes in the field that become homes of jackals. Right? Houses that have beware of dogs, you can understand they are homes of jackals. Right? Don't come in, don't disturb. So this is all homes of jackals, according to Bhagavatam. So guests go away without proper reception. Such a house is like home of jackal. Then 8th verse. Apyagnayastu velayam nahuta havishasati tvayodvignadhiya bhadre proshite maikarhichit.
O chaste and auspicious woman, when I left home for other places, were you in so much anxiety that you did not offer obligations of ghee into the fire?
So offering ghee in oblations of fire, this is something like for practicing sadhakas, it could be like sadhana. Are you not doing your sadhana well? So, 9th verse. 9th verse is speaking about worshipping fire and brahmanas. It's also kind of extension to the 8th verse only. Sadhana part. Yat pujaya kamad dughan yati lokan gruhan vita brahmanognischa vai vishnoh sarvadeva mano mukham.
By worshipping the fire and the brahmanas, a householder can achieve the desired goal of residing in the heavenly higher planets. For the sacrificial fire and the brahmanas are to be considered the mouth of Lord Vishnu, who is the super soul of all the demigods.
So one has to worship fire by offering oblations in the ghee, and one has to worship brahmanas by giving them prasadam. Right? So there are two ways of feeding Vishnu. So this 9th verse is speaking about two ways of feeding Vishnu, by feeding fire, by feeding brahmanas. So fire is considered to be, sacrificial fire is considered to be the mouth of Vishnu. So one has to offer ghee oblations, means he is offering oblations to Vishnu only. And by feeding brahmanas also, one is offering prasadam to Vishnu only, offering bhoga to Vishnu. Offering prasadam to brahmanas means offering bhoga to Vishnu. Like that. So, and Lord becomes more satisfied when brahmanas are fed than when somebody pours ghee in sacrificial fire. Patram pushpam phalam toyam. So brahmana bhojana, when brahmanas eat sumptuous remnants of food after yajna, that is a way of feeding Vishnu. By such activities, a householder may be elevated to higher planetary systems. Naham tadadmi yajamana havirvitane. This beautiful verse comes in the, I think, 3rd canto, 15th or 16th chapter, where Vishnu tells the Kumaras, I will not be pleased so much by sacrificial, putting ghee in sacrificial fire, but I will be satisfied when brahmanas are fed food dripping with ghee. Right? I will be very satisfied with that. Then final question, 10th question, 10th verse is about her sons. Api sarve kushalinas tava putra manasvini lakshaye swastham atmanam bhavatya lakshanair aham.
O great-minded lady, are all your sons faring well? Seeing your withered face, I can perceive that your mind is not tranquil. How is this so?
So these are the five reasons why a householder, woman or man, whatever, could be dejected. Fourth verse, about prescribed duties. They don't follow the prescribed duties properly. Fifth verse, they don't follow dharma, artha, kama. Sixth and seventh verse, improper guest reception. Eighth and ninth verse, about worshipping fire and brahmanas. 10th verse, about the welfare of progeny. So these are the different reasons why Diti could seem morose. No, 7th verse. Diti is explain, Aditi is explaining the cause of her sorrow. Sri Aditir Uvacha Bhadram Dvijagavam Brahman Dharmasyasya Janasyacha Trivargasya Puma Param Kshetram Grahamedhin Graha Ime.
Aditi said, O my respectable Brahman husband, all is well with the Brahmanas, the cows, religion, and the welfare of other people. O master of the house, the three principles of dharma, artha, and kama flourish in household life, which is consequently full of good fortune.
Then she says there is no disturbance in household life, as you questioned. So in household life, one can develop dharma, artha, kama according to shastras. But to attain liberation, one must give up household life. Rupa's important statement. So one should place himself in transcendental, renounced order. So that's why brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyasi. So one's human life has to culminate in renounced order. So we can also understand about the spirit of renunciation also. It's not that when grihastha, when somebody dies while being a grihastha, he may not go back to Godhead. It may not be so, because it all depends on the spirit of renunciation. Okay, not necessarily the order of renunciation. So Kashyapa is not in renounced order. That's why he is addressed herein as Grahamedhin. 12th verse. Agnayothitayo bhrutya bhikshavo yecha lipsava sarvam bhagavato brahman anudhyanan narishyati.
O beloved husband, the fires, guests, servants, and beggars are all being properly cared for by me. Because I always think of you, there is no possibility that any of the religious principles will be neglected.
So I'm always thinking of you, there is no principle that is neglected here. So everything is properly being done by me. 13th verse. Konume bhagavan kamo nasampadye tamanasa yasya bhavan prajadhyaksha evam dharman prabhashate. Okay, now there is no possibility of unfulfilled desires, because you are my prajapati, you are the personal instructor of dharma, you are my husband, so there is no possibility of unfulfilled desire. Yet I am suffering. So my suffering can be relieved very easily by your mercy. That she reveals from 14th verse till 17th verse. Just as the Lord, though equal to all, serves his devotee, You, though equal to all your sons, should protect Indra, who is devoted to you. That was her intention in speaking the 14th verse. 14th verse. Tavaiva marich manas sarirajah praja imas sattva rajastamo jushah samo bhavamstasvaru asura adishuk prabho tathapi bhaktam bhajate maheshwarah. So here her point is, Supreme Lord is equipoised. He is equal to everyone. But still, he protects his devotees. Right? So although he is impartial in one sense, still he is partial to his devotees. Similarly, as the father of both demons and demigods, you may be impartial. But still, just like Supreme Lord is inclined towards his devotees, you should be inclined towards Indra and demigods. Right? You should do something to reinstate them in their positions. Like that. So, Prabhupada speaks about some slokas about Lord's special inclinations towards devotees. Samoham sarva bhuteshu. Then, name bhakta pranasyati. Ye thama prapadyante. So, all these verses are proving that Lord is inclined towards devotees. So, everyone is trying to please Supreme Personality of Godhead in various ways. But according to their methods of approach, Lord endows them with different benedictions. So he is yethamam prapadyante. So that is the final thing. He is reciprocal. So because devotee approaches him with great eagerness and enthusiasm, so here Lord also will reciprocate similarly towards a devotee. 15th verse. She describes the problem. Tasmat isha bhajantyame Shreyasintaya Subrata Hratashriyo Hratasthanan Sapatnaihi Pahina Prabho.
Therefore, most gentle Lord, kindly favor your maidservant. We have now been deprived of our opulence and residence by our competitors, the demons. Kindly give us protection.
Parair Vivasita Saham Magna Vyasana Sagare Aishwaryam Shri Ryasasthanam Hritani Prabalair Mama.
The demons, our formidable, powerful enemies, have taken away our opulence, our beauty, our fame, and even our residence. Indeed, we have now been exiled and we are drowning in an ocean of trouble.
17th verse. Yathātāni punasādho prapadyeran mahātmajāh tathā videhi kalyānam dhiyā kalyāna krittama.
O best of the sages, best of all those who grant auspicious benediction, please consider our situation and bestow upon my sons the benediction by which they can regain what they have been, they lost.
So when demigods are exiled or they are in a bad position, that includes their mother Aditi also. She is also distressed. And as an affectionate mother towards her children, she is very much afflicted, and then she is putting her appeal in front of Kashyapa for some direction. So now from 18th verse onwards, we will see Kashyapa Muni's advice to Aditi on devotional service. Okay, this is the beginning of Vamandev's appearance. Okay. Thank you all very much. Prabhuji, would you like to say something about this small section? Dejection.
Actually, in the Shastra say that the moroseness of heart, dejection in the mind, these are either due to some past misdeeds or lack of fulfillment of one's duties, actually. So, like in that chapter of Yudhishthira Maharaj and Arjuna conversation, we find Yudhishthira Maharaj giving a long list of our Kshatriya's duties, which when he fails to do, then he feels some guilt or pinch sensation in the mind. So he's asking Arjuna whether you failed to fulfill any of them. So here also we find when Kashyapa finds Aditi morose, the Vedic tradition entails that whenever we feel dejection, we don't blame others immediately. We find out ourselves, what did I do wrong for my own dejection? So, like when I associate with multiple devotees, when I travel across the country, one such devotee I came across, he wanted to reveal his mind to me, you know. So he said that my heart is very dejected and I am morose, so I wanted to share with you and take some help. So he must have spoken probably about 15-20 minutes with me, at the end of which he pointed to himself as the cause of the dejection. He said, I cannot blame anyone for my dejection, because the response I gave for the situations that came in my life was an inappropriate response which caused me the dejection, he said. So in this way, the Shastras make a person take responsibility for our dejection or moroseness or unhappiness without passing the blame on other people. Generally, when people are dejected, they try to sort it out by setting right other situations or other people. So the list which we read just now about which Kashyapa is asking Diti shows how both the husband and wife are very religious and pious, and the feeling of vacuum or something arising in the heart, they are actually attributing it to their own responsibility in their life in terms of dealing with the guests, in terms of dealing with Guru and Shastra and their prescribed duties and things like this. So in the material world, there is always up and down. Sometimes we are fired up, sometimes we are fried out. So these are cliches in ISKCON we use. But whenever we are fried out, just like when Vyasadeva was dejected, he very silently sat and contemplated, and then he identified the cause that I have not sufficiently glorified the Supreme Lord. So the universal principles are such that if the Atma lives according to the universal devotional principles given in Bhagavatam, Atma can be Yayatma Suprasidati. It's always happy. But when the Atma goes against its natural course as prescribed by the Supreme Lord, he becomes dejected and morose. And when one is sincere, then the cause of that moroseness will be revealed to the individual, and then one can take the appropriate action to become truly happily situated in one's in the glory of the soul, actually. So he gives five reasons here, and the last reason is actually the cause why she is morose, because her sons are not happy, and because the sons are born from the mother's body, the mother considers her children like extension of her body. The seed is given by the father and the body is given by the mother. And that is why even the Dwaraka queens, when they saw Krishna, out of shyness, they sent their sons to be embraced by Krishna, which is as good as they getting embraced from Krishna, actually, because the children are extension of the mother's body. So here Kashyapa has identified the actual cause of her dejection. And then the fifth reason, and then she will express it. Yeah.
Ganthara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. We'll take questions for tomorrow's test. Explain the roles of the six elements of Manvantara. Explain the roles of the six elements of Manvantara. based on 8.14. Manu, what is the role of Manu, Manuputra, demigods, Indra, sages. Then, next question. Summarize the conversation between Brihaspati and the demigods. Write a brief note on blessings of great souls based on the contents of this chapter. Contents of 8.15. Then, what are the enquiries of Kashyapa unto Aditi? Kashyapa's enquiries to Aditi. And Aditi's answer. Aditi's reply also. So four questions. Four questions, right? So third question is 20 marks. Remaining all 10 marks. So tomorrow we will have the junior batch class from around 8:15 to 10:30 in Vidyapeeth room on 1.9, first canto 9 chapter given by His Grace Radhesham Prabhu. So all of you are also can attend. Then we will skip Vidyapeeth, we will skip morning Bhagavatam class and we will come here. Then 10:30 onwards, 10:30 to 1, we will have senior batch class here in Vidyapeeth room or wherever Makanlal Prabhu decides. Okay. Thank you. So you can write your exam before 10:30. They will write their exam after 10:30. If you want to attend, you can write post-lunch also.